It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Trump's nominee for Attorney General is facing confirmation hearings in the Senate. We'll find out where he stands on the Mueller investigation, a border wall, and more. First, some of the best memories on the road can come from what you find after being lost in the middle of nowhere. And it seems like Wisconsinites know how to find the magic in the midst of miles of farmhouses and cornfields. Our next guest makes it a point to drive to less traveled places, even if it's just to see what there is to see. He's driven all over Wisconsin on state trunk highways, driving them from end to end wherever the roads may go. Sometimes their paths make sense, sometimes not so much. Eric Paulson co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. He's also a radio DJ on Milwaukee's 95.7 and Madison's Rewind 92.1. Eric runs a Wisconsin road trip website called statetrunktour.com. Eric, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, how did you get into this this hobby of driving these trunk roads in Wisconsin from end to end?
Well, I've always been a bit of a road geek, and I've always loved to explore. And this dates back to when I was a little kid living in Oconomowoc, where Highway 16 and 67 intersect. I always thought it was interesting if you just followed that number, where would it take you? And it turns out 16, if you go west, you end up in La Crosse, and then that used to be a U.S. highway, went all the way out to Wyoming and east to Detroit. And 67 takes you to all these cool places through Kettle Moraine and all the way north to Manitowoc County. And so over the years, I just got more and more interested in how the state highways and just the highway numbers came to be and where they go. And so I thought State Trunk Tour would be a good way to kind of catalog it because they are state trunk highways after all.
And this trunk highway phrase, it's not something that's necessarily a household phrase anymore. What do we mean by that?
Yeah, I was wondering about, I have wiroadtrip.com too, which forwards to it, if people remember that more easily. A trunk road is any, actually it originated with the railroads, a trunk route is any route that connects two important points together. And so that started with the railroads, and when they decided to implement a numbering system for highways, they decided to call them state trunk highways. And actually, Wisconsin was the very first governmental unit of any kind in the world to implement a numbering system for roads. So I thought that was pretty fascinating, too.
So we started that trend of attaching numbers to our roads.
Wisconsin started it in 1917. Michigan followed in 1918. And, of course, now it's everywhere.
All right. Now, you've got this exhaustive list of a bunch of our numbered trunk roads and sights to see as you drive from one end to another. When did you start putting this together as a tour? I'm going to pick number whatever, drive end to end, and find cool stuff on the way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's still a work in progress very much because this turns out it takes a lot of time to drive all these roads and catalog it and everything. It dates back a little over 10 years, actually. And I started just on a whim to see, you know, is this interesting? I started with Highway 59, and I actually live in Milwaukee, just north of where 59 ends, and the other end is in Monroe. And so I drove to Monroe one day and had a grilled cheese and sandwich at Baumgartner's on the square there, and then just hit 59 and drove that route all the way back into Milwaukee. And, you know, I went through Albany and saw the Sugar River Trail and some charming small towns through Edgerton and into Whitewater and through the Kettle Moraine area and Waukesha, where I follow the old roads through town if they build a bypass because it's much more interesting that way. And then just 59 all the way in past Miller Park through National Avenue to the very end. And I thought it was fun and interesting. It took a couple of hours. And there were a lot of cool things to note along the way. And I thought, well, let's see what some of these other roads are like. And it turns out a lot of them will take you to so many cool, quirky, interesting towns and places. I figured it was worth doing.
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things about your project. It's easy to, depending on where you're going, to hop onto, you know, 90 or 94, a big highway and drive past all the cool towns and sites and restaurants and things like that. You're actually driving right through the heart of it.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I found interesting about Highway 16 when I lived in Oconomowoc as a kid. You know, the interstates, you zoom past the Dells and Mauston and Tomah and Sparta and all those places, and 16 goes right through the heart of those, kind of paralleling it because it was the interstate route before they built the interstate. And it's much more interesting to go through the towns if you have the time. And, of course, with this project, you have to have the time.
Talking to Eric Paulson, talking about his website, statetrunktour.com. He picks a trunk highway, these state roads, the numbered roads, drives end to end and finds cool stuff along the way and then catalogs it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite scenic drive or vacation drive in Wisconsin, whether it's one of these numbered highways, you can throw in those county roads while you're at it if you want. You can call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll go to your calls. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got to tell you, I like your guest, I just love to drive around some parts of Wisconsin, and taking the off-beaten road is always somewhat of a joy, or different than a lot of fun. Question I have is, does your guest, can you recall or have any real funny names associated with the highways or with the towns that they go through? I think of, you know, I think it's Slab City has the... a bar called the Morgue and stuff like that. You know, is there just anything that's really amusing in the names that goes along with these trunk roads? Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Charlie. Eric, stories like that?
Well, there's a whole bunch of unique, quirky names of places you go past, and certainly some of the road names, too. In fact, one of the articles I have on statetrunktour.com, you got to kind of search for it unless I highlight it, 10 quirky street names we found in Wisconsin. You know, those listing articles, people love those. So there's Chicken of the Woods Road in Three Lakes, and I don't even know if I can say this one, in Mishicot, but they said it on Seinfeld. There's an Ass Man Road.
Huh. Okay.
Literally,
that's the name
named
of the road.
That.
We're going to allow that.
Okay. Well, there's
we'll
a sign
that
says
take our finger off the button here.
Okay. Stratford has Fur Food Road. Huh. You have Darn Republican Street in Chautauqua. There's an interesting story that dates back to the 1950s on that one. There's Crass Road in Tomahawk, and Reek Road in Wayawiga, and just a lot of interesting ones. And in Washburn County and in Barron County, they go with fractions, 29 and 5/16 Road and things like that. So it's very curious the things you can stumble across, and that's one of the things that makes these drives interesting.
So finding the right roads, like fishing around for the right drill bit size. No, that's the 3/16. That's not going to work. We got to turn it 5/16.
Yeah, they go into some serious fractions on these things. It's wild.
Thanks for the call, Charlie. We'll go next to Cole with us in Appleton. Cole, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Cole?
I wanted to say this idea that he has is fantastic. I like to do it as often as I can. They actually sell in Wisconsin and maybe other states what's called a gazetteer. And it pretty much gives you every road, stream, everything like that out there. And as a fisherman, I like to kind of pick an endpoint of where I'm going to go fishing. And then I take every back road that I possibly can that goes past the stream. And it takes me through some really, really fun areas.
Fantastic, Cole. That sounds like a great project. Do you like to hit some of the, I know you're not maybe fishing along the way, but do you like to stop at some of the streams and other water bodies along the way, Eric?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get beautiful pictures. It's a great sight. And some of those back roads, and I do want to expand this into some key county roads and some of the rustic roads and some of the other really cool drives. I just started with the state highways because it was a good theme. And yeah, but some of the back roads in this state just lead you to some of the most hidden gems that you can possibly imagine. So, yeah, I do plan on doing that and expanding that. So I might run into them on a back road somewhere.
Definitely. Good fishing, Cole. Jack joins us now in Mercer. Jack, hi.
Yes, hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Jack?
Well, I've been doing a similar thing, but I've been going on the roads that are scenic rural routes that are letters, like Highway H that runs from Mercer on Highway J, and it goes north for 13 miles, and it winds through an area along the Turtle Flowage that ties into Spider Lake and all these lakes, and it's one of the most amazing routes. And where it comes out at the end on Highway O, it's still out in the middle of nowhere heading towards Wakefield, Michigan, but it's right near the Michigan border. And that's about as rural as you can get of anywhere. And so after I started traveling that one, I started following a lot of them, like Highway FF that goes from outside of Mercer south. And these roads, you have to go 25 or 30 winding between the lakes. And if you look from overhead on some drone footage, you can see that the roads are based on water everywhere, and they're just winding in between rivers and lakes and streams all over the place.
Jack, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it. Eric, do we see that with the trunk roads too? They're not just carved in straight lines through whatever they come across?
Yeah, they're not interstates, certainly. And, for example, up at, near that area, like 32, which is a main, you know, it's a big highway in Milwaukee and Kenosha, all the way up to the northern boundary at Land O'Lakes. But around Three Lakes and Eagle River and everything, it threads like a necklace weaving between lakes up there. So the county highways do a lot of that, too. And it is beautiful up there. H and O, Highway B up near where he is, that's around Boulder Junction on north. That goes right into Michigan and becomes a state highway in Michigan up there. So it's really cool, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to kind of expand my coverage as I keep doing this to some of those key county routes.
Jack, thanks a lot for calling in. We're talking to Eric Paulson. He's a Wisconsin radio DJ, co-host of the Discover Wisconsin show on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. He's the creator of the State Trunk Tour website, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite roadway in Wisconsin that you enjoy the views on or the places you can stop along the way? Is there a highway near you, a trunk road near you, a county road that you think people should check out? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Eric Paulson. He's taking us on a tour of Wisconsin's trunk highways. His project is called the State Trunk Tour. You can follow him at a website of that name, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite roadway to drive in Wisconsin? Tell us what you like about it. Do you think Wisconsin is a good state for road trips? And what's your favorite Wisconsin road trip memory? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Eric, lots of callers. Let's talk to some more of them. Lisa is with us in Janesville. Lisa, hi.
Hi there.
What do you want to tell us about, Lisa?
My favorite thing is that my husband actually did something similar to this back in the early 90s when we first got together. He said, let's just jump on Highway 26, see where it takes us, and we'll stop when we find something interesting. And we ended up stopping in, we left from Janesville, we ended up stopping in Appleton and Oshkosh and going to the Air Museum, which is a place I had never even been to or heard of back then.
Lisa,
right at the north end of 26.
What's that?
That's right at the north end of 26, exactly.
Okay, so we did. Yeah, so we did do the whole thing. Okay.
Yes, you did,
Lisa. Thanks a lot for the call. When you're out driving, Eric, do you try to just to stop at whatever catches your eye?
Yeah, it takes me forever to do these routes because I stop at so many things, and every little shiny object catches my eye. From, you know, charming little taverns to museums to natural formations to interesting mailboxes. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff out there.
And, Eric, when you do a trip from, you write about 33, going from Port Washington to La Crosse, you detail a lot of stops. I mean, this could be a multi-day trip easily, right?
Oh, it very easily could. And, I mean, you know, you go from the beauty of Port Washington and its harbor on Lake Michigan to the beauty of the Driftless area in La Crosse. The world's largest six-pack is at the end of that route. And in between, you have hairpin turns at Wildcat Mountain State Park. You go through Portage and Beaver Dam and just all of these wonderful places. And 33 is a great example of a good cross-section of the state from, if you will, coast to coast.
Lisa, thanks for the call. We'll go now to Eric with us in Rice Lake. Eric, hi. What's your story?
Well, I'm a back roads aficionado also, and I'm working on Barron County at the moment. I've driven, my goal is to ride, go on every road in Barron County, and I've got about 1,500 miles in so far and about a third of the county, and I do it on a bicycle.
Oh.
And you find the coolest, most beautiful spots out at the end of these dead-end roads and out in the middle of nowhere, and you meet the farmers, and you see some spectacular things. It's just a lot of fun. It's going to take me a couple more years to finish.
Eric, good luck biking all the roads of Barron County. What do you think, Eric?
I think Eric's going to be in better shape than I'll be after I finish driving all those roads.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, biking, that's a different story. Do you get to, Eric mentioned meeting a lot of the people along the way. Eric, do you get to meet a lot of people when you're taking your road trips?
Sometimes, yeah, a lot of times I do, especially if I stop in like a cheese shop or something that's quintessential Wisconsin. And, you know, so I tell them what I'm up to and everything. Because a lot of times people see me taking pictures of their place and they're like, what are you doing? And so I kind of tell them what I'm up to. So, yeah, I definitely do that.
Back to our callers now. Ann is with us in Green Bay. Ann, hi.
Hello. I love what you're doing, Eric. But what I want to know is, because some of these areas probably get pretty remote, do you list, like, gas stations and hotels or motels where if somebody poops out, they can find a place to sleep, or if they kind of start getting low on gas because they've gotten so lost in the, you know, the atmosphere that they forget they're running out of gas? So do you list those types of conveniences?
Not quite yet, because that's a lot of extra detail, although I'm trying to talk to some gas station companies, and I've had Best Western Hotels previously sponsored my site for a while, and I noted every hotel that they had in the state. So I would like to add those things, and that's as I this has turned from hobby into business a little bit, too. So as I look for some sponsorship support in those categories, I will be definitely adding those things, because I think that's handy for people. And I actually want to work on an app, too, that will help people. If they want to note, you know, good gas stations along the way or hotels along the way, it'll tell them as they're driving around.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Eric Paulson, talking about his road trip website and hobby. His website is called statetrunktour.com. He is going down these numbered Wisconsin highways from end to end, putting up a lot of the interesting points to see, the attractions along the way. Back to your calls now. Victor is with us in Appleton. Victor, hello.
Hi. I like to travel through like Wapaka and Washira County, take a lot of them small county road trunks, a lot of turns, and there's even a couple of, I think we got two covered bridges there, single lane covered bridges. And also, while I'm there, I like to go to the fish hatchery that's there, state fish hatchery.
All right, Victor, thanks a lot. He's got covered bridges. I didn't know we had a lot of covered bridges in Wisconsin, Eric.
There aren't many. I mean, the most well-known one is just outside Cedarburg on what's creatively called Covered Bridge Road. And I have not seen the ones that are up there in Washura and Wapaka counties. I got to get up there and check them out.
All right, Victor, thanks a lot. Malachi joins us now in Richfield. Malachi, what did you want to tell us about?
Out in Waukesha, there's Highway 100, and during the summer, a lot of car guys meet up and cruise down the strip.
And when you say car guys, are you talking classic cars there?
Classic cars, tuners, motorcycles, all sorts of stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so it's Highway 100, big thing.
Yeah, would you have some favorite sights on Highway 100, Eric?
Well, Highway 100 is more of a kind of it was the original bypass for Milwaukee. But there are a couple of interesting things along Highway 100. I mean, there's some historic stuff. There's a chapel from the 1850s in Franklin, just in the middle of other development. If you're in Wauwatosa, you pass Curry Park, which has an interesting golf dome in the winter, and it's the site of the first airport in the Milwaukee area. There's a lot of interesting things even along the roads that have so many strip malls along them. You wouldn't think there's anything interesting going on.
And Malachi mentioned that car and motorcycle event. Do you ever try to time your road trips, Eric, to catch maybe not that event, but the local festival or other cool stuff going on at a particular day and time?
Oh, I very often do. I mean, Highway 100's always been a popular, you know, cruise the strip road for a long time. And a lot of people do bring their cool cars there. But I do try to list a lot of events. So if people are looking to do something for the weekend, for example, tomorrow I'll have what's coming up this weekend around Wisconsin up on the front page of statetrunktour.com. And I do try to hit some events to just kind of showcase when these towns come alive the most during festivals. And you get some great pictures that way. And that just kind of helps promote why it's cool to check these places out.
Let's go back to our callers now. Phil is on the line in Park Falls. Phil, hello.
Hey, how you doing? I love this. I could talk about this for hours, but I know that's impossible. Do you remember Highway 15?
The original?
Yeah.
Like the one that connected Beloit with Milwaukee before I-43?
Right. It kind of morphed into the Rock Freeway. Hmm.
Yes,
is that it
did.
Do you have favorite memories of that, Phil?
Well, yeah, because I lived right by 124th, which is the County Line Road, and it was called National Avenue when it came into Waukesha County, and then it was called, or no, it was Oklahoma.
I'm going to jump in, Phil. Your line's a little choppy there, but there's a lot of history, Eric, as Phil is telling us, behind some of these roads.
Yeah, I think what Phil is mentioning, the main road between Beloit and Milwaukee used to be a two-lane road, State Highway 15, most of which is now County ES from around Elkhorn on up into Milwaukee. So when you drive that road, You are driving the historic old highway, and you will see a lot of interesting sights along what is now a county road. And some of those routes that used to be the major route between places that were supplanted by an interstate, I like to follow those, and I'm going to add pages on those pretty soon, too, because that's where a lot of the cool historic stuff lies, and that's what's interesting to see. I mean, the East Troy Town Square, so cool, but everybody zooms by it on I-43. You take the old 15, which is ES, or State Highway 120 up into it, then you can see how beautiful that town square in that town is.
Do you have mixed feelings, Eric? I mean, we've got these faster highways that are, they're really convenient. They get us from point A to point B a lot faster. But have we lost something?
Well, we certainly, I don't know if we've lost it per se, but we often forget about it. A lot of it's still there. Now, it certainly negatively affected a lot of small towns, but of course, then there's been some positives to it, you know, the classic balancing act of things. But by riding the old highways, and you saw this with Route 66, nationally, a lot of towns died when they built the interstates, but with the increased interest in following the old road, a lot of those small towns along Route 66 have kind of come back. And so I think in Wisconsin, there's so many cool, quirky things to see in these small towns. The more we let people know about it, the more people will stop in and check things out, spend money there, and help the towns.
As we wrap up, Eric, you've done a lot of driving on these roads. What's on your radar? What are some of the roads you want to hit that you haven't gotten to yet?
Well, I haven't finished 73 all the way, which is a weird, quirky highway that goes just all over the place. I want to add the U.S. highways, which are part of the state highway system technically, but, you know, 2 and 10 and 12 and 18 and 51. I don't have those on there yet because they're federal highways, but I'm adding those. And then I do want to add some of those county routes and rerun some of these routes that I've done in the past because you have to keep up to date. Things change along these highways.
All right, Eric, happy driving, and thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Rob.
Eric Paulson co-hosts the Discover Wisconsin show Sundays on Fox 6 in Milwaukee. He joins us to talk about driving Wisconsin's highways and byways, in particular the trunk roads, those numbered roads all over Wisconsin. You can find information about routes Eric has taken and plans to take and things to see along those roads at statetrunktour.com. And you can still share your own stories at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up after the news, we'll take a look at some of the top stories in national politics, including confirmation hearings for President Trump's nominee for Attorney General. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new report says staff at the Lincoln Hills Youth Prison are still using pepper spray in solitary confinement despite a court order to the contrary. We'll get more details from our state capitol reporter. First, it's time for a weekly look at the top stories in national politics. The partial government shutdown has dominated the headlines lately. We've talked about that a lot. This week, we're focusing on another big story, the Senate confirmation hearings of William Barr, President Trump's nominee for Attorney General. The ongoing investigation into Russian election interference and the Trump campaign has been front and center during Barr's hearing with the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said yesterday that if confirmed, he would work to protect Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
The country needs a credible resolution to these issues. And if confirmed, I will not permit partisan politics, personal interests, or any other improper consideration to interfere with this or any other investigation.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you watched the confirmation hearings, do you feel confident that William Barr would let the Mueller probe continue as it is? Should he? What do you want to see from the Attorney General's office when it comes to the ability to indict a sitting president? How do you want to see Congress respond when the Russia probe finishes up? And do you think the Senate should ultimately vote to confirm William Barr as the nation's next attorney general? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Darren Samuelson is a senior White House reporter for Politico. Darren, welcome to Central Time.
Good afternoon.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Now, Darren, a lot of times the confirmation hearing for a replacement attorney general would be probably the top story in national politics. Amid the background of the shutdown, the Mueller probe, do you think this one's maybe not getting the limelight it usually would?
Maybe not. There's so much going on. There's been so much going on
throughout this entire Trump presidency that everything fights for oxygen in this era where, you know, even a huge story is gone by the next day. So, yeah, we've had whiplash over and over and over again. Clearly, this is a very important position. It is perhaps, you know, one of the three most important positions in a president's cabinet, no matter who the president is. It is certainly getting some attention, but I would agree that it has, especially in the last month and a half between when President Trump nominated William Barr and today, it has kind of been behind a whole bunch of other things. And, you know, maybe part of that is also William Barr is someone who has been in American you know, politics before. He was the attorney general in George H.W. Bush's administration. So at least in the Senate, there is a, maybe a little bit of a sense that, you know, he's been through this before. At the same time, it is a very different time than back in the early 90s.
Yeah. Before we get to the confirmation hearings, the Judiciary Committee hearings yesterday, give us a little William Barr 101 for people who have maybe been following all those other stories. Who is he?
Sure. William Barr, 68 years old. He is well known in Republican and really in law enforcement circles. He served in the George H.W. Bush administration, first as the deputy attorney general, so the number two position. Your listeners probably are very familiar with Rod Rosenstein, the current deputy attorney general. So William Barr had that job in the early days of the George H.W. Bush administration, and then he went on to become the attorney general when the previous attorney general went on to run for a Senate seat in Pennsylvania. Barr took over the position for the last year and a half. Maybe some of the biggest issues people might remember him for was his prosecution, which actually was with Robert Mueller, who at the time was the head of the DOJ criminal division back then, the Lockerbie bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. That was one of the major things that William Barr prosecuted, a couple of Libyan officials who were charged in that case. So one of many issues that were sort of tantamount there in the final year and a half of the H.W. Bush administration before the 1992 election when Bill Clinton goes into the White House.
Now, one of the big problems that previous Attorney General Jeff Sessions ran into was he recused himself from the Russia probe. President Trump, not real keen on that, it turned out. So how much of yesterday's hearing was devoted to how Barr, as Attorney General, would treat the Mueller probe?
It dominated the hearing. It was the most important series of questions that Democrats and really Republicans, for that matter, had. There were certainly other policy issues that they wanted to talk about, drug policy, you know, equal rights, voting rights. But Robert Mueller and the Russia investigation was the overwhelming majority of questions. It's very important in that, yeah, as you said, Jeff Sessions recused himself at the very beginning, which obviously was something that really upset President Trump. In this instance, if William Barr is confirmed, he has said he will not recuse himself, despite making, you know, a good series of public comments on the matter. He doesn't. It doesn't sound like he would let any of that knock him out of the position of basically being the supervisor for Robert Mueller. That's the position that the attorney general has. It's the position that Rod Rosenstein had once Jeff Sessions recused himself. And with that job, you have the authority to approve Robert Mueller's budget, approve the subpoenas that he sends out, approve any criminal indictments that are made or other major decisions that Robert Mueller makes, including ultimately maybe the most important one is the release of Robert Mueller's findings in some shape or form. There's a huge debate over what that will say or how it will say and whether the public will even get to see it. So all of those questions were pushed at at William Barr yesterday, trying to get some clarity about how he would handle those major decisions if he did get confirmed.
Yeah, a lot of people want to see the final product of the Mueller probe, for better or worse. They want to find out what he says. William Barr seemed to foreshadow, if I'm reading this right, Darren, don't hold your breath. We might not ever get to see this text, right?
Yeah, I wrote about this about 4 or 5 months ago and predicted exactly this. I mean, that people will be disappointed if they're expecting some major, you know, Ken Starr-like report that tells us everything and anything that happened in the course of the 2016 presidential election that involves the Russians and collusion with President Trump. There's a good chance that, you know, through the media reports and through these indictments that we have seen, we've gotten a really good picture of it. But under the rules that Robert Mueller actually exists under, all he is required to do is send a report to his boss, in this case, currently Rod, actually it's Matt Whitaker, I should add, who's the acting attorney general. This is all part of the Jeff Sessions resignation back right after the election. But so Mr. Mueller is required to give a report that really just says who he prosecuted and who he declined to prosecute. And that is a confidential report that would go to the attorney general, and then it's up to the attorney general to decide what to put out from that. And Bill Barr indicated yesterday he would pretty much take that and then summarize it in some form and try and give that to Congress. And that's where the rub is in terms of how much detail Mr. Barr's summary would be. And then you have this incredible pushback already beginning from the Democrats who are saying, well, actually, we want to see everything that Robert Mueller writes down. And you know, remember, the House Democrats are now in control and they have subpoena power and they likely could get everything that Mr. Mueller has, perhaps with a couple of exceptions for classified national security information. And then there's also a huge caveat of grand jury secrecy that would need to be dealt with, where there's a lot of material that would probably be protected under grand jury rules.
So maybe not the bestseller of 2019. Darren Samuelson is with us from Politico, looking at some of the top stories in national politics, keying in right now on a Senate confirmation hearings, a committee hearing for the Attorney General nominee William Barr. As you mentioned, Darren, the Mueller probe wasn't the only game in town. Barr was also asked about the ongoing shutdown and the idea of a border wall. Here's a little listen to what he had to say.
We need a barrier system across the border. Part of that is illegal immigration, but a big part of it also is preventing the influx of drugs. Mm-hmm.
So the issues of immigration and President Trump's proposed border wall, he sounds like, William Barr sounds like he's on board with what the president wants.
Yeah, I think he's definitely in the law and order style of President Trump, and I think that that's clearly part of the reason, you know, he also got the nomination. You got to remember that this attorney general position is not one that is just about the Mueller probe. It's about so much more, including immigration crackdown, including, I guess, implementing, you know, the criminal justice reforms. So, yeah, Bill Barr certainly indicated that he would be on board. He did, of course, express disappointment with the shutdown that is happening, but I think he would be standing with President Trump and supporting even, you know, where we are right now in this this standoff that now is into its fourth week.
Before we move on from yesterday's hearings to some related issues, you mentioned the importance of the attorney general position, and it's a unique position in a lot of ways that, in theory at least, this is a job where they're supposed to be more independent of the president than any other cabinet secretary, right?
Technically, yes. It gets a little more tricky. You can go back to, you know, Bobby Kennedy as the attorney general for President Kennedy. I think Donald Trump has really harped on this through and through, as he points to people like President Obama's first attorney general, Eric Holder. Sometimes they are seen as sort of political allies there to help the president's policies along, which certainly, you know, with Jeff Sessions, you saw that on some of the issues that the president really was making front and center, including immigration. So, yeah, you do implement and you do, I guess, choose where your priorities are based on a president's agenda. You know, where the challenge becomes one is when you have investigations involving a president and the Justice Department is actually in charge of doing those investigations. And that's where President Trump really was upset with both, you know, the Justice Department and then the FBI. Remember, this investigation into the Russian election, you know, started before Donald Trump even took office. It was sort of in the early parts of the campaign in 2016. You know, that would have been a Justice Department run by President Obama's picks. And so, you know, there's that lingering skepticism, paranoia, some might say, how the president felt about the Justice Department, you know, leading that investigation, which, you know, ultimately leads to kind of just go through that history. James Comey ultimately being fired, Trump believing, you know, in part because of the Russia investigation, which could have now end up putting him in trouble for an obstruction of justice charge. And anyway, there's a huge long debate over how that would play out as well.
Darren Samuelson is with us, senior White House reporter at Politico, talking about some of the top news in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Should the Senate confirm President Trump's new nominee as Attorney General William Barr? How do you think the Russia probe will wrap up? Do you think that the public should see a detailed report of what happened in that investigation or not? And with Democrats now controlling the House, do you think they should be talking about impeachment of the president? We'll get into that. Darren's been writing about that. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Darren Samuelson is with us from Politico, looking at some of the top news in Washington this week. Darren, related to some of the issues that came up in yesterday's hearing, you've been following the latest on what we know about the Mueller investigation. Prosecutors filed new documents with the federal court in regards to campaign chair Paul Manafort, formerly with the Trump campaign. Lots of redacted black boxes on this. Did we find out anything?
There was a little nugget buried at the very end of that material that came in yesterday. And it said, again, lots of black lines. It makes it very difficult for me or anyone else who's really not, you know, obviously in Mueller's investigation. But you got to see that it looks like Paul Manafort was actually trying to land people jobs in the Trump administration in January 2017. So, you know, right after the inauguration, right before the inauguration, going through intermediaries to try and do that. We don't know who the intermediary is, but we know that Mueller learned that information from Rick Gates, who was Paul Manafort's former deputy, who has been cooperating with with Mueller since February of last year, when he pled guilty and started to spill the beans, more or less, about everything that all of his interactions with Paul Manafort. So, you know, one piece of really interesting information, and this is also important because at this point in time, Paul Manafort was under investigation. He wouldn't go on to be actually indicted for another 9 months or so, but clearly he was viewed as someone who was a criminal target, and at the same time, he's still interacting with the Trump world after he'd already been ousted, of course, you know, from the campaign, but he still remained in touch. He also was, you know, helping as an intermediary to line up interviews or people who wanted to meet with President Trump who were reaching out to him asking if they could use his name. So he remained in Donald Trump's orbit, which I think has got to make people squeamish in Trump's orbit who still haven't been charged.
And Rick Gates, you mentioned cooperating with the Mueller probe. Apparently, Paul Manafort, in theory, had a cooperation agreement with the Mueller team. They aren't really working with him anymore. They said he misled them in a lot of ways. So where does that stand?
Yeah, so Rick Gates, we learned yesterday as well, continues to cooperate, and there was a key date yesterday where Mueller's team was required to tell the court when the sentencing for Mr. Gates would begin, and they told the court, well, we need a delay again until March in order to continue to allow him to cooperate. As for Paul Manafort, as well, Paul Manafort had pled guilty and was cooperating. He actually met with Mueller's prosecutors a dozen times. He was actually brought up to the grand jury in Washington at the courthouse where he testified. But after that, the Mueller team, I guess, found a number of instances where he apparently lied in the course of that cooperation, which puts him in even more trouble. He's facing sentencing in two different courthouses. There's going to be a sentencing in early February in Virginia, which is the courthouse where he was convicted already. If you remember back last summer, there was the trial, and he was convicted on several counts of tax and bank fraud. So he's facing significant jail time in that case. And then in March, he'll be sentenced in Washington, D.C., for the guilty plea that he had. And so the lying to Mueller in the course of that is really just piling on. And if you're in Manafort's team right now, you know, you're anticipating a pretty heavy sentence, a couple of sentences. And I think he's in his late 60s and likely is looking to spend the rest of his life in prison no matter what. So just things are not looking good for Paul Manafort, who also, I should add, is in failing health as he has been held in jail since I think it was last summer once he was accused of witness tampering heading into his case. So it's been a rough many months for Paul Manafort.
Talking to Daryl Samuelson from Politico about some of the top news in national politics. I want to spend a little time on a piece you wrote, Darren, about impeachment and the prospects for it. In the election campaign last year, you had some Democrats saying, yeah, impeach the president. Some saying, no, let's not talk about that now. Some Republicans saying, watch out, they're going to try to impeach President Trump if you elect Democrats. What is the state of the conversation right now, starting in the U.S. House, now controlled by Democrats?
Yeah, so I took a pretty big picture step back look at how the impeachment process would work. I encourage your listeners to go find it on Politico. If you Google the only impeachment guide you'll ever need, you'll find it. And we basically looked at the process. We obviously Congress started 2 weeks ago, and you know, right off the bat, you had a freshman from Michigan dropping a couple of words there that are probably not allowed to be relayed to your listeners. But she said that impeachment is something that she was elected to do. That obviously did not please Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership, who you know, would rather let the next many months play out. They'd rather let Robert Mueller finish his work, get that report that we were talking about before, and build the case, which you're going to see, you know, even short of the report. You're going to see Michael Cohen testifying next month. This is Donald Trump's former lawyer who has implicated the president on campaign finance crimes, who himself is going to prison in March for a whole host of crimes. So he'll be testifying before he goes to prison before the House Oversight Committee. There's going to be more of that kind of hearings and more of that kind of, public record building by Democrats, who also plan to reopen their own Russia investigation in the House Intelligence Committee. They would rather not talk about impeachment, but it is sitting out there, and they're going to have to make a calculated decision at some point in time whether, you know, the high crimes and misdemeanors that the Constitution very, you know, vaguely describes is the rule for impeachment, whether they want to pull the trigger on it, whether they have enough compelling evidence, whether there's a smoking gun or three or five that make them decide that, you know, this is time to do it. And so what we did in that story, not just looking at the House of Representatives, but we asked the question, what on earth would move enough mountains to have 67 Senate votes to actually convict and remove a president, which would be the first time in American history that has ever happened. And obviously, you have 47 Democrats. It's pretty simple math here, but 47 Senate Democrats who likely would probably go along with a conviction of the president. Maybe a couple might resist that. That means you need to find at least 20, maybe 22, 23 Republicans. And, you know, obviously, you first thing you would say is there's no way any Senate Republicans would ever convict Donald Trump. But we started to break it down and sort of look at who might be the leaders on that side. You have Mitt Romney now in the Senate. You have institutionalists like Ben Sasse from Nebraska. And then you end up, you know, you start to kind of look across the landscape at who else in the Republican world would potentially go along. You look at people who are up for re-election in 2020, and there's some very tricky politics there with primaries that Republicans would need to deal with if they were to take a vote to convict Donald Trump and send him out of office. That likely would put their own careers in jeopardy. However, in a general election in a state like North Carolina or Colorado, where you have incumbent Republican senators, a vote to convict might actually be a helpful vote in a general election in 2020. And then there's, you know, other senators down the road, Ron Johnson from your state, among others, who, I think would be looked to. I talked to Ron Johnson for the piece, and he said, you know, he refused to sort of indicate where he would go, but, you know, says, look, I would be part of that jury in the Senate that would hear the evidence and make a decision on whether to convict the president. You know, we've only had two impeachment trials in the course of our 230 years in America. Andrew Johnson after Civil War, who was not convicted, and Bill Clinton in 1999, also not convicted. The founding fathers made it a very high hurdle to remove a president from office, and that's why this is, you know, such a big challenge. And I guess the last thing I'd say is, politically, if Donald Trump is, you know, impeached but not convicted, he probably comes out on the other side much stronger politically. And I think that's the Democrats' concern, is if he comes out on the other side and he hasn't been removed, he's likely in a very good position for re-election in 2020. So tons of calculations that need to go on here. And then you have Democratic presidential candidates themselves running, and I'm sure they're going to all be asked to raise their hand and indicate where they are in impeachment as they step forward and run in the Democratic primaries with an enthusiastic base that probably does want to impeach Donald Trump. So tricky politics here.
We'll leave it there for now. Darren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
That's Darren Samuelson, senior White House reporter for Politico, where you can read his piece titled The Only Thing You'll Need to Read About Impeachment. I think that's the headline. You can find that at Politico. He was with us to talk about some of the big news out of Washington. We focused a lot on the confirmation hearings for President Trump's nominee for Attorney General William Barr. You could still let us know what you think about William Barr's nomination, the Mueller probe, the idea of impeachment, if you think it is something that Democrats should pursue, or if you think it's a bad idea, whether you support the president or not. You can email ideas at WPR.org. You can always tweet us at Central Time WPR. What are your thoughts about the, dozen, 13, whatever, top stories going on in national politics? Hard to keep them straight. Email ideas at WPR.org or send us a tweet at Central Time WPR. We can get a lot of things from vending machines these days. The usuals are the chips, candy bars, and soda. Those are the ones we usually see and buy. Here's one that may be on the way, at least to a college campus near you, pizza. A handful of colleges in Ohio, including now Ohio State University, have introduced the pizza ATM as part of their food service options. It's meant, I guess, for those times when students are hungry, but the cafeteria is closed. Because it's really hard to find pizza, I suppose, on a college campus. Here's how it works. The cafeteria staff load the pizza ATM up with about 70 pizzas. That's how many it holds. The hungry students press some buttons. The machine heats it up for 3 to 4 minutes, and out comes the pizza. Now, talking about this around the office, people quickly raised quality concerns. Is this going to be good? The pizza's sitting in the vending machine for a long time, heats up for 3 to 4 minutes. Maybe it's not that good. On the other hand, you know, if you've ever been at a bar, 12:30, 1 in the morning, whatever random frozen pizza the bartender throws in their little pizza oven, it tastes pretty good at that time. Maybe at dinner time it wouldn't look that good. Middle of the night, hey, all of a sudden it's not so bad. So we'll watch, we'll see if we can get in our break room here a pizza ATM and take it for a spin ourselves. We'll get that in the budget. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.